Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
And here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
This is going to be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everyone, to the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Glad to be with you today. A whole lot of NCAA basketball coverage on this hour of the program. So hang on for that. Of course, this is a big time of year in March. March Madness upon us right now. But some moves in free agency. Eddie Lacy goes to the Seattle Seahawks. And, yeah, he's a big boy. He came into camp a little heavy the last couple years. But they think they can keep him trim and running well. It's never averaging over 4 yards a carry against Seattle. But I guess they saw what they liked. I did like Eddie Lacy, but he was out of shape and injury prone. So he did have his good moments in Green Bay. All right, now the Packers get Martellus Bennett. And he comes to them. Yes, exactly. Very nice. Good move. Ted Thompson. Good to see. He comes from the Patriots after 1 year with them. 7 touchdowns with 55 receptions this year in New England. He had spent the previous 3 years with the Bears. I think the Packers saw some good things when he played against them. And so he comes in at tight end. That puts Jared Cook out there, the hero of the Dallas game in the NFC playoffs, and he may be going to the Seahawks. They are interested in him. Now, Julius Peppers gone from the Packers. He's going back to Carolina, where he started his career. He had a few good years with Green Bay, but never got to the Super Bowl, to the NFC Championship game a couple times, but not quite all the way, not meeting his expectations, because that's why he came to Green Bay after coming to us from Chicago. Dayton Jones, former first-round pick of the Packers, signs with the Vikings. He was kind of a bust. Now the Vikings get him on a 1 year, $3.7 million contract with incentives. He might get up to $5 million. So that's what happens. Adrian Peterson, I would still like to see him in the Packer uniform. You know, here's the potential Packer roster on offense. Randall Cobb, Jordy Nelson, Adrian Peterson in the backfield if he were to sign. Aaron Rodgers, Martellus Bennett, Davante Adams. We got all-stars all over the place. If Adrian Peterson would sign, I think we could get him at a good price, and I think it would be a good move for the Packers. He has incentive to play against the Vikings, and he has incentive to win the Super Bowl if you were to join with the Packers. So a lot coming up on the show. I'm Packer Dave. Steve Leventhal will join us in our next segment. A lot of college basketball coming up on the Sports Report.
Did you know that the average yearly repair bill for a car 5 years or older is more than $1,200? Having repair coverage for your car just makes sense. But the trick is not to overpay for it. With Toco Warranty, you can get a highly rated vehicle protection plan usually for less than a tank of gas per month. And now, we're offering a zero down payment program. To get a great car vehicle protection plan at a super low price, call Toco Warranty at 1-800-987-3157. That's 1-800-987-3157. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Packer Dave, Bill Raftery here. Let's talk a little basketball. Get away from that football. This is where the real men are.
All I need are some tasty waves, cool buzz, and I'm fine.
Okay, it's the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Now bringing in Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago. And Steve has been in Milwaukee covering NCAA basketball. And tell us about what's going on there.
Well, you know, you talk about tasty waves and a cool buzz. There's nothing that's more tasty than watching, you know, 48 hours of college basketball nonstop, Thursday and Friday of the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. It's you know, for basketball junkies like me, it's heaven on earth. That regional features a pair of 5, 12, and 4, and 13 team seed games. So just to talk to you a little bit about who's going to be playing there and who we're going to be following, one of the teams is from Indianapolis is Butler. And their claim to fame is, of course, that they gave Villanova two of their only three losses they've suffered so far this year. So they're certainly a team to be reckoned with. And so we got their coach, Chris Haltman, to talk about, among other things, the fact that they had a close call with an airplane, not dissimilar to what Michigan did at the very beginning of the Big Ten tournament. And he talks about how that's affected both of their teams.
Coach, there was a lot of attention on Michigan because of what happened and what it turned into for their results. Can you share the experience of what happened to your team and how it affected you and your team?
Yeah, sure. I think that what a great story that is in college basketball with Michigan. Congratulations to them for the run that they're on. And thank the good Lord that they are, everybody is safe. I just think that what they probably did is what we played, the way we played the next week, and that is you really play pretty free because it just changes your perspective on things when you feel like maybe your life is in the balance or at least it could be at risk. So I think for us it was our next game we played very well against Providence. And I think there's an element of team stuff that happens out of that where because you're going through something traumatic together. So there is a unifying element of that that I'm sure that they experienced. It's unique to have two of those situations in one year in college basketball. But I'm sure that, you know, they're going to look back on it and remember that week and a half in a lot of ways.
Also, we had a chance to talk to the players from Butler, and we had a chance to ask Avery Woodson and Keelan Martin about how they achieved their success against Villanova this season.
We've just tried to play our best basketball whenever we face a challenge, and if that's against a ranked team or if it's not, you know, we just come out and try to compete as hard as we can, and we know that every game is different. We just try to give each and every game our all.
Following up on that, how did you beat Villanova twice?
You know, we just came out competitive. You know, we wanted it, and we came out together, and that was our game plan, just being together as a team, as a collective group. You know, be the more ready team, be the more together team, and we came out and we executed well offensively and defensively. Our game plan was on point.
Also, the Big Ten is going to be represented from both Minnesota and Purdue. And first of all, Minnesota is led by Coach Richard Pitino. And if that name sounds familiar, of course, he's the offspring, the son of Rick Pitino, the coach at Louisville. And he was the Big Ten Coach of the Year. So he's got a pretty good team. They finished in the top four, and they feature Nate Mason, who's an all-Big Ten first team. So he talks about not counting out, that's Pitino that is, talks about don't count out the Big Ten teams. Here's Richard Pitino.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of talk that our conference is down, you know, and I think a lot of that has to do with we may not have a lot of teams in the top five or top ten, you know, but there's no easy outs. You know, I wouldn't want to play a Wisconsin who's an 8 seed. I wouldn't want to play a Maryland, a Michigan who's a 7, a Michigan State. You know, those are all tough outs, you know, to go along with us. Purdue, obviously, is terrific. Northwestern's terrific. So, you know, our conference is full of great coaches, really smart players who know the game, don't beat themselves, and talented players. So I think if we're not the best conference, we're one of the best, you know, and I think it shows when you get 7 teams in the tournament.
And lastly, we're going to look at Purdue. And Purdue won the regular season in the Big Ten. They're the number 2 offensive team, the number 5 defensive team. And they feature a couple stars in Vincent Edwards, who averaged 12 points a game. and Caleb Swanigan, who was the Big Ten Consensus Player of the Year. He's a monster under the boards. He averages 18.5 points per game and 12.6 rebounds per game. So Coach Painter talked about his star and his role on the team.
Anytime you have someone who, you know, gives you everything every day, he puts in a lot of extra time. He's had to really work, you know, not just improve him from a basketball sense, but just his body. You know, he spends a lot of time in the weight room, spends a lot of time, you know, making sure his diet is where it needs to be for him, you know, to have success. He moves so much better this year. He's got a great mind. He's got good hands, good feet, knows what's going on the court. But, you know, at times he couldn't get from A to B. You know, that's kind of with a wide body, below the rim type guy. Now he moves so much better. And so now he can take that basketball IQ along with his improved skill level, and he really puts people in a bind. And so I've really enjoyed being around him because it sets a bar in terms for everybody else, in terms of, you know, basketball is important to him. And he's worked really hard to be in the position that he is. But his team won. You know, I think we have a lot of good players in the Big Ten. I think he's separated himself with his consistency, but also that his team won the league.
So we're really looking forward to these games, and it should be a lot of fun. I just love this time of year.
All right, let's go to Phil Myers and Steve. He's the assistant sports director at SRN Broadcasting. They're talking Duke and North Carolina.
All right, Phil, it's time to talk NCAA basketball now that the tournament is actually here. And I want to sort of call on your expertise in having seen Duke, having seen North Carolina a bunch of times. I know that you don't get specialized in the other teams as much as you used to. So we're just going to basically stick our discussion and stick to those two schools. So let's start first with Duke playing in the East, starting out in Greenville, South Carolina. Let's kind of look at them on the top and bottom of their roster and see, you know, what are their strengths going into this tournament?
Well, Duke is usually very good from the perimeter, and they're very well disciplined. And that leads back to Coach Mike Krzyzewski, who seems like he's been there since the Stone Age set upon time with man. Again, it's a very good, solid team. You have to look at Jason Tatum, who's going to possibly be a very high pick, as well as Emil Jefferson, who's very talented, not to mention first-team All-ACC Luke Kennard. He's a strength, and at the same time, he can also be a weakness. He does like to shoot the ball. The only place he usually passes is to the basket. But when he gets hot, he can really carry a team. If they're moving the ball around Duke University, they're going to be pretty dangerous. Riding a big high of taking the ACC tournament, defeating North Carolina in the semifinal round on last Friday night will really help them. Not to mention that they played really well against Notre Dame. In my opinion, I really like Jason Tatum the best on that team. He seems so polished. He plays a very professional game. He can't wait to get to the next level and play in the NBA. This is a team that's loaded with stars. They were preseason number one. They came upon some injuries. They at times didn't live up to expectations. Finally, down the stretch, they started to put it all together, and they really are peaking at the right time.
Well, that and they are a dangerous team. As you mentioned, Luke Kennard, when that kid gets off, I mean, he can shoot with a defender. He can shoot from way out. His shooting ability has just been blowing me away.
Well, Steve, one big thing you bring up, like he can create his own shot. And in the college level, that's a rarity for these kids. You know, that's an NBA task that not even every professional has, the top notch. His big thing is he likes to come off, you know, normally when there's a curl screen, it's done without the ball. He actually comes off these curl ball screens right into the lane. He gets there, and he just loves to shoot 15, 17-foot jumpers from the elbow. And when he is on, he's absolutely deadly. And he's one of those kind of guys, shoot until you're hot, and once you're hot, keep shooting. So one of the downfalls that might be, it could be him with live by the sword, die by the sword. If he's not having a good game and they have a problem at the perimeter from knocking down their shots, that can go against them.
So, and then one player we didn't really talk about, but who certainly is a big factor on that team, is Grayson Allen, or as my friends like to call him, Trip Allen.
Yeah, absolutely. Grayson Allen is a guy who I've started to notice a lot more that the referees are keeping a stronger eye on. I think that maybe a lot of the officials feel like they've been shown up by his antics, tripping lots of players in the past. He's another guy, you know, he can play on the wing and he also can bring up the ball and pass pretty well. He can knock down a shot as well, but he needs to keep himself focused on the game at hand and not get, you know, riled up, especially being in front of the cameras, every game being a national telecast. The other weakness I just want to bring up, Steve, that Duke normally has, and it's still there, there's not a strong post presence on the team. You know, they can go down to Jefferson and such, but they don't have that big go-to guy when times are tough. You're missing 3-4 shots in a row where you can just pound it and get to the free throw line. You know, that's the problem when they're facing North Carolina, for example, when they're struggling.
And also one of their weaknesses is they're not a very deep team. So if their guys get into foul trouble, then they have to change the tempo, maybe play some zone defense, but that could also be their demise.
Absolutely. That's a great point you bring up. Typically, Mike Krzyzewski, he only plays about 7 or 8 guys, granted that they're all outstanding players, but he's not a team that usually possesses a very deep roster.
Hey, are the North Koreans coming? What's that in the background?
It's the heating.
All right, sorry.
Kim Jong-un.
So, anyways, you were saying?
A deep roster. They don't really have one. I think a lot of that is, you know, Mike Krzyzewski, he's actually honest with a lot of his recruits. If you're coming to play at Duke University, you're going to play. He's not going to sit there and say, well, you might have a chance like they do at some other schools. And, you know, their rotation is kind of tight. Again, 7 or 8 guys. But as you said, they have problems against teams that have big physical players at times, because if they're able to get some of those post players or big defenders in foul trouble, it causes a lot of problems and it makes them soft inside.
And what's amazing, though, is, and this was so evident in that North Carolina-Duke game in the ACC tournament, was they know how to drive the lane and either make a shot or get fouled.
Yeah, they are very good. I mean, this is not the Duke University of 20, 25 years ago where they're outstanding college players, but they're not professional players. These guys are very athletic. They can slash. They can drive to the basket. They're very well coached. They understand that often officials will call fouls. They look for contact when you're aggressive. That's the key, aggressiveness. If you can attack the basket and you have players that are quick enough to get there, it really does a number on your opponents. Their stars can't play because they're in foul trouble. Plus, Duke is getting 3 points at the line while they're able to rest while the clock is stopped.
Do they have what it takes to make it to the Final Four?
Absolutely. I think they very much do. And just by looking at the brackets, all things being equal right now, I do think that if I had to make a pick, I do think they will be playing in Glendale come April 1st, at least.
All right. And then on the other side of the bracket, who could conceivably only meet them in the championship game are the North Carolina Tar Heels. And they got a number one seed despite the fact that they got knocked out in the semifinals of the ACC tournament. Is that number one seed justified in your mind?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to remember, number one, they haven't lost a game at home all year. All their losses were on the road or at a neutral site. They were very close losses. And they, especially down this stretch, I know the second half of their conference schedule, they had the toughest slate in the country. So the body of work that they put together over that time more than warranted a number one seed.
And now let's look at the strengths of the team, which there are many on that team. You've got the front court, you've got the back court, and you've got Justin Jackson, the ACC Player of the Year.
Yeah, they have a very complete team, and they have a very good team. That being said, I think they were more talented last year. They didn't really add anybody that's had some significant contribution this year. That being said, sometimes for any college, you can have addition by subtraction, just growing up and mature, the maturation process of players. There are so many times over the last decade, especially with players going one and done or two and out around the collegiate landscape, that teams that seemingly are less talented actually advance further on than the teams that they had that are better. As you said, Steve, they're very good inside. The one guy that they did add that's a tremendous talent is Tony Bradley. And I think he's going to be a dominant player in the future. Hopefully he stays for North Carolina's sake for at least one more year. I would expect that so. But a slim down Kennedy Meeks and Isaiah Hicks, who are upperclassmen and they're about to leave the university, they are very tough on the blocks. The emergence of Luke May has been tremendous this year as a sophomore. He's been leaps and bounds better. But Joel Berry is the one that's going to decide whether they win or lose. He orchestrates an offense extremely well. You're talking about knowing how to get to the basket for a guy that's listed at 6 feet tall. He can do that with ease. He protects the ball with his body very well when going to the basket. He can absorb contact. And also, he can shoot it from the outside. The one strength that the Tar Heels have this year that they didn't possess last year, they're a much better three-point shooting team. Jackson has improved tremendously, not to mention Berry from the outside. The one thing that we need to see, though, is Nate Britt step up. He's struggled from the perimeter down the stretch, and at times he's reverted offensively to how he was last year as a junior. So they're going to need him because, you know, you're not going to always be able to pound the ball inside. They're going to be facing a lot of zones and collapsing defenses on Meeks and Hicks and Bradley, which means they're going to have to open and stretch the floor to give them room. And that means that Berry, and that means that Jackson, and that means whether it's Britt or Pinson and others, they're going to have to knock down those shots.
Well, yeah, and the thing, the strength of this team is getting all cylinders working, but I suppose that's really, that works for, you could say that about any squad. But in particular, this team, and you talked about players stepping up, you know, with Bryce Johnson leaving last year, it kind of opened up a little more room for Kennedy Meeks to pick up his game. He's probably been about the same, but the one who I'd say is really cut, and especially in the last few weeks of the season, was Isaiah Hicks, because he would get into foul trouble a lot and he just couldn't contribute. But lately, he's been staying out of foul trouble, and his one of his best assets is he's a great free throw shooter. And if you have a big guy who can hit free throws down the stretch, that's a huge asset.
Yeah, because that's a team, they, you know, for the resume of North Carolina, as it seems like they've always been playing basketball, is that they're able to get their big guys to the line. You know, you talk about Hicks, and he's shooting 83% from the free throw line this year, which is absolutely tremendous for a big man. Anytime, you know, in college basketball, you're shooting over 75% and you're 6'9" or above, you're really helping your cause on the basketball floor.
Yeah, Shaq would kill for being able to shoot free throws like that.
I mean, we're talking, the thing is, and it's changed recently, guys like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Moses Malone, Karl Malone, who's slightly smaller, but they used to be able to shoot free throws really well, and, you know, that seems to change. I don't know if there's a lack of concentration, a lack of practice, their hands are too big, whatever kind of excuse you want to make. But North Carolina, they make their living out of getting to the foul line and getting people in foul trouble. The one thing that's different, we just said, from Duke that separates them from North Carolina, the Tar Heels are usually very deep. They usually go 10 deep of guys that can play, that can contribute. And that's something, whether it was with Dean Smith or with Guthridge or now here with Roy Williams, they try to integrate players before they're ready for prime time. They find them maybe 7, 8, 10 game minutes, so they're ready when the time comes, when they become upperclassmen, or when they're counted on to really contribute to the Heels. You know, Luke May is another guy. He can hit from the outside as well as he can be on the inside. You know, you got to hope that Hicks doesn't get into foul trouble and revert back. But, you know, you have Meeks, Hicks, Bradley, and May. You're going four deep in the post position, and that's, you know, that's 20 fouls right there. And they can really slam away at you.
Yeah, the key to North Carolina in this tournament is hitting those outside shots, getting Justin Jackson back on track. Because he was, you know, he deserved the Player of the Year based on his body of work during the season. And somehow the last couple games, he's lost the edge a little bit. And, you know, my cure for that would be, okay, he seems to be able to still make those 16, 17 footers. He's just not making the 23 and 24 footers. So don't shoot those. Just push him in a little bit. And he's much better. He comes off a screen and he kind of gets a good open look. He's absolutely lethal. So if you get Jackson and you get Berry going off and you got the guys playing underneath, I don't see any team that could stop them once they got it going.
I can see teams stopping them. I think, you know, remember, first off, they're college athletes. I'll address that weakness in 1 second. The thing with Jackson, I think that because he was ACC Player of the Year, I think he's taking so much upon his own shoulders, and he's getting away from what he was doing earlier this season and for most of the season. He seems to be pressing a lot more. And like you said, he's just got to let the game come to him. He can knock down shots. He's, if not the best runner, floater in college basketball, he's certainly up there. And he's got such a nose for scoring. Just play your game. Just be yourself. And he's pressing, and that's something that I think if he just takes a deep breath, you know, he's going to be able to settle in. Another advantage, Steve, before I get to those weaknesses, it may have not been the worst thing in the world, although, you know, you try to look for silver linings and things, that North Carolina went out of the ACC tournament on a Friday, because they're going to have one full week to prepare. And maybe Justin Jackson and some of these other guys are just worn down a little bit. You know, the ACC schedule, it's just a grind, an absolute 18-game grind where it's one ranked team after another. And, you know, maybe, you know, these guys get banged up. Maybe he's got a heel problem, a foot problem, you know, whatever the case might be. And I don't know as far as injuries, because most of the time they're not reported, because it's just the grind of getting through a college basketball season. If you want to talk about the weaknesses, though, twofold. One is, they sometimes fall in love with shooting from the outside, even when you have by far probably the best front court in basketball. They get away from going into the post when they can get to the free throw line, or at least get a nice, easy shot around the basket 70% of the time, if not more. And they fall into those traps. And that's been something that's happened ever since Roy Williams has been there. Sometimes they just start to gravitate away from what they do well. The other thing is defensive intensity, holding that up for 40 minutes. They seem like they can fall asleep on the other end of the floor because maybe they're so athletic, or they can get out on a team, take a lead, and let teams back into a game. You know, you might be able to get away with it in the first round. You might be able to get away with it whether they're playing Arkansas or Seton Hall in the second round. But you better believe if they wind up facing Butler, or they wind up facing Minnesota, or whatever the case might be, after those first two rounds, you fall asleep, you can find yourself watching the rest of the tournament on television.
Yeah, well, if you want a silver lining, I'll give you a silver lining.
I'd love to have one.
On two other occasions, North Carolina won the Maui Invitational. North Carolina won the regular season ACC. North Carolina got knocked out in the semis, and Duke won the ACC tournament. You know what 2 years those were?
Yep, championship years for the Heels.
2005 and 2009.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of times if you go through the track record, teams that turn out to winning the ACC tournament, like it, not just applying to North Carolina, they don't go on to win it. That being said, they did last year, and, you know, they were one shot away, of course, of being crowned champions. So, you know, they're going to be very formidable. That's not to say they couldn't go out to Kentucky. They couldn't go out to UCLA or Kansas, Louisville, or on the other side to Duke, or Arizona, which I think could be very tough too.
And yeah, you know, and I think what you see is that when you look at overall, and you know, my impressions of having seen this tournament now so many times, so many years, the teams that get out in those early round games and they win by 25 or 30 points, they can cruise down, they can rest their kids, they got two games in 3 days. They tend to come out a lot stronger when they get to Sweet 16 and Elite Eight time.
Yeah, you just want to put games away as simply and easily as possible. Remember the 2009 team, they went out and they got it. They pretty much crushed everybody. I think, Steve, I want to say, if this was the correct year in 2009, the only game they got was in the second round from LSU. Otherwise, it was one of the biggest margin of victories through the tournament. Get on them, get your players some rest, survive in advance, and that's what the tournament's about.
Absolutely. Okay, Phil Myers, he's a SRN Assistant Sports Director, and thanks so much for giving us your thoughts and your feelings on the Duke and the Carolina teams and the NCAAs.
My pleasure, Steve. Can't wait to enjoy the tournament with you.
Now let's hear from Mike Jaminski, former Duke All-American, NBA veteran, and current CBS TV coverage on NCAA basketball tournament. Here we go.
So, Mike, as some people who are not from the area, who are not North Carolina or not ACC, try to explain the rivalry.
It's hard. It's you know, arguably two of the six crown jewels in college basketball historically. I mean, if you look at, you know, you put UCLA into the mix and Indiana and Kentucky and Kansas. You know, Duke is right there as far as all-time wins. And, you know, the fact that we're 9 miles apart, that we've really driven each other to be successful. And whether it's change in coaches, you know, I really think early on, certainly Coach Smith drove Coach K to become who he is. And then after Coach Smith retired, I believe now that, that K is driving Roy Williams to do the same thing. So it just it ebbs and flows and goes back and forth, but it's always a great game.
Now, I know you didn't play for Coach K, but what has he meant to that program?
Hey, he's really grown. He had growing pains his first 3 years, had a losing record at Army, didn't have a great record at Duke, and then they got the recruiting class of Dawkins and Allery and Billis and David Henderson, and that was the cornerstone, much like Coach Foster built, and that was got him to his first Final Four in 86 and his first championship against Louisville. And then he just, you know, they just took off from there. And, you know, kid came late, called Leitner comes along, and Grant Hill and Bobby Hurley, and they win back-to-backs in 1991-92, and he took off from there.
So talk about the Final Four, because you did get into it, and how much it has changed and evolved over the years.
In 78, our team was on national TV three times. We were on national TV for the Eastern Regional Final and the two games in the Final Four, and that was it. And now every great program in the country is on national TV virtually every game, you know, depending on what channel or, you know, what venue's carrying them. So it was, you know, there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter, there were no camera phones, there were no, you know, there was no social media at all. So it was a lot different deal. And I think the term Final Four was coined only 4 years before that. I don't know what they called it before that, but it was only in the early 70s that it became known as the Final Four. So the whole thing changed, and then, of course, after our year, Magic and Bird played in 79, and that really elevated it to another level, and it's taken off since then. That was also in a time when the field was expanding from 32 to 48 to 64. So everything grew. The attention grew. The media coverage grew. The field grew, and it just became a national phenomenon.
That's true, because early on, even if you finished in the top tier of your conference, you were not guaranteed to go to the NCAAs.
Well, that was a great thing. The greatest game that was ever played in the history of the ACC was the 1974 ACC Tournament Championship of Maryland against NC State, with David Thompson and Tom Burleson and Tom McMillan and Len Elmore and John Lucas. And that year, the ACC had three top five teams in the country, North Carolina being the third, and only one of them was going to the NCAA tournament, and you had to win the ACC tournament to get that bid. And, you know, NC State winds up winning in overtime, one of the great games, you know, ever played. But it's just, it meant so much more. Now, you know, this year the ACC gets nine teams, you know, one tournament champion and eight at-large bids. You know, the Big East in a 10-team league gets seven bids. So it's you know, a lot more teams have a feel than know that they're going in regardless of what happens in the tournament.
Well, tell me just for a minute, you know, your impressions. You do broadcast these games. And again, just the excitement, the fun, what makes this one of the most special sporting events of all?
Well, it's the one and done aspect of it. And you can, you know, take Michigan State getting beaten in the first round last year. You know, you can look back over the history of the tournament, and there are any number of upsets and, you know, teams that are relatively unknown, because this draws more casual fans than anything. You know, the hardcore basketball fans kind of know the landscape, but it's just the one and done. You know, if you played, like, if it was the NBA and you played a best out of seven, then the best team would probably win virtually every time. But the thing about this tournament is the best team doesn't always win, and that's the excitement of it.
Okay, I'll part with one last memory or lingering memory. Ask you a question. Duke Carolina games. There's a very memorable game that I know you were involved in, as I also watched that game in angst in Durham when Dean Smith decided for whatever reason that he wanted to slow the ball down, and he basically played to a 7 points scored in the first half. Just tell me your recollections of that game.
It was Spinarkle's senior game, and Coach Smith just wanted to play a 20-minute game, and we played zone. And we got the tip, went down, scored. They came, just dribbled the ball. No shot clock at that time. And I don't know, I don't even remember how we got the 7 points. But it was 7-0, and that was also, they took two shots, both by their center, Rich Yonaker, which both missed the rim, which begat the air ball chant. That was where it first started. And then came out and played even in the second half. We played, it was, the final score was 47-40, and but it was a bizarre, I don't think it was on TV, but I have no idea what the radio guys were talking about for 20 minutes. You know, I mean, just the ball just kind of standing around.
Yeah, it was quite a game.
All right, lots more coming up with Greg Eklund from eklundsports.com. He's from Kansas City, but he's also covering the Milwaukee Regional. Talking Big 12 when we return on the Sports Report. Be your own boss. Listen to this from Home Improvement USA. Homevestors, the We Buy Ugly Houses people, is America's number one real estate franchise. Since 1996, their franchised owners have purchased over 75,000 houses. Typically, you'd pay cash for ugly homes whose owners are in difficult situations. Get them in selling condition and make excellent profits. There's solid backing from Homevestors National Advertising, and franchises are $18,000 with some liquid capital needed for tools and startup. Let's talk about it.
Contact Home Improvement USA at 888-437-4223 or kwwradio.com. That's 888-437-4223 or kwwradio.com. Be your own boss. Contact Home Improvement USA at 888-437-4223 or kwwradio.com.
Hi, this is Dan Patrick. One quick message for you, Packer Dave. It's really, really brief and to the point. You're in fuego.
I am in fuego, and it's that time of year, March Madness. I'm Packer Dave along with Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting. And now let's listen to Steve with Greg Eklund from Eklund Sports. He's covering the Milwaukee Regional. His website is eklundsports.com. Talking Big 12.
We are sitting courtside in Milwaukee with Greg Eklund from eklundsports.com, someone who's been a longtime contributor to SRN, especially in the early days of audio. And so what I want to talk to you in our big NCAA preview is really focus on the Big 12, because I know that you've covered Kansas pretty regularly. So if we can start with the Jayhawks, you know, what are we looking out for there? Who do you expect to be stepping up and making an impact in this year's tournament?
So much of the tournament is about guard play. And Kansas has a self-made outstanding guard. Frank Mason was the Big 12 Player of the Year, who came into KU as an unheralded freshman, but has made himself into an outstanding player, and he's the reason why the Jayhawks could possibly go a long way in this tournament.
And then what about the rest of the team? Who's a standout there to you?
Well, they play four guards because they're thin on the front line. So if they're not shooting very well, Kansas could flame out of this tournament quickly. Generally, the reason why they won the Big 12 is they find a way to ratchet down their defense in the final moments of a game, and they have very strong closing abilities. So they might be down by 8 or 10 points, but they have the ability to come back and make a game of it and win eventually that game in most cases. Of course, one and done here, but in the position that they're in, they could be a team that could go to Phoenix in the Final Four, or a team, if they don't shoot well, they don't play defense, and don't do all those other things, they could be gone by the first weekend.
So they did get bounced out of the conference tournament. You know, what happened there? And I know these days it isn't necessarily the bad thing to not win your conference tournament.
They didn't have Josh Jackson, who is one of the premier freshmen in the country. He was suspended one game because Kansas has been dealing with a lot of off-court activities during the course of the season. They've won 13 straight conference championships, but it seems like they've been dealing with 13 different off-the-court issues as well. But Josh Jackson is one of the premier freshmen. He's a big guard who could help out on the rebounding end. But because they didn't have him and they're not very deep on the bench, that's the reason why Kansas lost early in the Big 12 tournament.
And you certainly can't discount their experience. They seem to be in this tournament year in and year out. They got a number one seed and they didn't get it for nothing.
They made it to the Elite Eight last year and fell short to the eventual champion, Villanova. And Villanova, when they played each other in Louisville last year, was clearly the better team. But because of that experience that you had mentioned, Kansas is more seasoned now, and possibly another reason for Kansas to be in a position to go to the Final Four this year.
All right, well, let's look at another of the top teams that are in the Big 12 that you would expect to make a splash and to at least make a statement in this tournament. So tell me a little bit about the West Virginia team.
Very strong defensively. Javon Carter is the premier player for West Virginia. He was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, a guard. And Bob Huggins will have a team that will press you and will defend you. So you better be in a position to outscore the West Virginia Mountaineers because they are going to defend you hard.
Okay, what about Baylor?
Baylor is probably the most talented overall team in the Big 12, but for some reason or another, Baylor collapses at the end of games and ends up losing six games as they did in the Big 12 conference. But they have a world of talent, a tremendously sized front line. So if you're going to beat Baylor, you have to beat them on the perimeter because they're most likely going to beat you inside.
Who are some of their top players?
Jonathan Motley was a player who, in the non-conference season, really stood out as a possible national player of the year. He's been up and down a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but Jonathan Motley, big, tall forward, strong forward. He's only, and I believe he's a junior now in this year, but he's their best player.
And lastly, we'll talk about the team. One of the teams we'll see in Milwaukee and in Iowa State.
Iowa State, a very underrated team. They really started clicking toward the end of the year when they won at Kansas and broke an extended home court winning streak that the Jayhawks had going for themselves. That woke up everybody in the Big 12 as to how strong Iowa State could potentially be, and they showed that when they won the Big 12 tournament.
And who is their go-to player?
Monte Morris, a point guard, one of the best point guards in the country. He did not make the Koozie semifinal list, and Iowa State is very upset about that. And they are playing with a chip on their shoulder because of that. But he is an outstanding point guard, has one of the best turnover ratios in the country, and he's hard to match.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. The four number one seeds, you know, Gonzaga, Villanova, Kansas, North Carolina. Which one of them won't make the Final Four? Or will they all make the Final
Four? Well, I haven't seen them play in person, but the team that always seems to disappoint me as a number one seed is North Carolina. Somehow they always have the talent, and I've seen it from the years that Roy Williams had some great Kansas teams and didn't make it to the Final Four. I saw some tremendously disappointing losses under Roy Williams when he was at Kansas. And so that's my pick for the team not to make the Final Four. You were expecting me to say Gonzaga, weren't you?
I don't expect anything. You know, I'm trying to be an objective reporter here. And no, I mean, in some ways, I would agree with you. North Carolina is a very Jekyll and Hyde. The team that went out and beat Miami in the early round of the ACC tournament could have beaten anybody, maybe even a low-level NBA team or certainly a European team. At the same time, the team that lost to Duke had such enormous potential, and they couldn't hit boat They couldn't hit water from the side of a boat. So I totally share that opinion. They absolutely can play two different teams, two different styles of basketball. And if they're not hitting, they're not hitting, and they sometimes can be disappointing. Anyway, so thanks so much for your respect, Greg Eklund of EklundSports.com. What is Greg Eklund Sports?
EklundSports.com. I'm based in Kansas City, so it's a lot of pieces that I go out and cover anyway, but just presented in a written form, audio form, and with pictures, a very colorful site. Check it out, EklundSports.com.
All right, thanks a lot, Greg.
Now on the Sports Report, we bring in from Toronto, Ontario, our professor of sports. He's going to be talking NHL and soccer today, John Poulter. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks, Dave. Hope you are as well, and the same to Steve. Hope everything is good in Chicago.
Oh, John, okay. This is the greatest 4 days of the year.
Okay, well,
simply ahead. Because it's NCAA basketball.
That's right. You,
a lot of Steve on this show, don't you think, John?
Welcome to the Steve Leventhal Show.
Yeah, no kidding. It's the Steve Leventhal College Basketball Marathon Spectacular. Okay, let's move on to, let's start with the NHL, John. And, of course, Washington's still on top of the heap right now.
Yeah, Washington just keeps rolling along, leading the Eastern Conference as well as the NHL, of course, leading that Metropolitan Division. Once again, having a great season, 222 goals plus 68, slowing down a little bit, 5-5 in their last 10 as we record this. But this is a team that clearly has done very well in the regular season for the last number of years. And we've chatted about this a couple of times, that the playoffs seem to be their bad situation. And at some point in time, this is a team that's either going to have to fish or cut bait. They're going to have to play well in the playoffs and put those demons behind them, or they're going to go down as being one of the bigger choke artists in terms of playoffs. And I think the interesting thing with the Capitals is that the playoffs generally are a time when you're good defensively and you get good goaltending. And there's no question that with Brandon Holtby, who's a very serious Vezina Trophy candidate, that they've got great goaltending. They've got the goaltending you need to win in the playoffs. Whether they have the overall defensive system to win in the playoffs is another story, and it's going to be a trying time again for them. There's going to be a lot of eyes on that team to finally come through, and I've made this parallel before, but in a lot of ways they're very much like the Washington Nationals, and they're very much like the Atlanta Braves. Braves went to 12 or 13 seasons either winning the division or being in the wild card, and only had one World Series win to show for it. And I'm beginning to wonder if perhaps this is the thing that we're going to see with the Capitals. But hey, hope springs eternal. And if you're a Washington Capitals fan, I guess you're just waiting now for the playoffs to start and hoping against hope that your team is going to do well.
Yeah, just don't spend too much money on the second or third round tickets, you know.
Well, we've been used to that in Toronto for a number of years, so we don't have to worry about that. So I can sympathize with the Washington fans at not wanting to spend that money.
Yeah, now, but if you look at the rest of the Eastern Conference there, you know, those teams, Montreal, Pittsburgh, Columbus, the Senators, the Bruins, they've all won seven out of their last 10 games, whether there was a tie in there or not. And so it looks like that the Penguins are nipping at the Caps' heels.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure coming from behind. And, other than the Rangers, who are 5-5, as you say, everybody in that top five or six has won at least seven of the last 10 games. And I sometimes wonder if Rangers might be in a little bit of a cruise mode, because they're clearly going to be a wild card team. And they've got that first wild card spot absolutely locked up. There's no way anybody's going to catch them unless they absolutely totally collapse. I mean, as we record this, we're sitting here looking at the Rangers with 90 points and the Islanders, who are in the eighth spot, which is the second wildcard spot, are 13 points behind them. They do have a game in hand, but it's still 13 points. So the Rangers are kind of in no man's land, and that's another team that spends a tremendous amount of money and doesn't have an awful lot to show for it. They did get to the finals a couple of years ago against the Kings, but they haven't won since 94, and we all know what the New York media is like and the New York fan base is like. it's going to come time soon where they're going to have to produce, or we're going to be looking at another rebuild in New York. And we all know how that goes when we look at a fan base and a media base like we have in that city.
We really didn't go over the Western Conference, so let's have the much shorter version of, and it seems that the Blackhawks have sort of taken that slight, it's like a horse race, and the Blackhawks are out by a nose at the moment.
They are, and they've actually gained, they played one more game than the Minnesota Wild, but their win in Montreal Tuesday night, when Minnesota was losing to Washington, has put the Blackhawks back in front as we speak by a point. I think that's going to be a horse race to the end. What's really saved Chicago is that the last three times they've played the Wild, Chicago has come out ahead, and their best players are their best players right now, that being Crawford, Kane, and Taves. And this kid, Nick Schmaltz, has been a real pleasant surprise. I didn't know very much about him until I saw him play this year, but he's been quite impressive, and once again, Stan Bowman has come up with a good young player at a fairly low price, salary-wise, to fill some of the gaps where he's had to trade people because he's up against the salary cap. And one of the things that's going to help the Hawks is there's a lot of talk that the salary cap may go up $3 million next year. And if that's the case, the Blackhawks would be one of the main benefactors because, as always, they're close to the salary cap.
And it gives you a chance to pick up a good winger or a nice defenseman.
Well, it does. And Johnny Oduya, interesting pickup from the Dallas Stars. And if we can see the Johnny Oduya that we saw through 2012 through 2014 or 15, great pickup for the Blackhawks. If we see the one that played the first 55 or so games for the Dallas Stars this year and spent most of that time on the injured list, not a great pickup. He's a free agent at the end of the season, and he's a very small salary hit for the Hawks for the rest of the year. And I think the fact that he adds a little bit of depth, and they can pair him again with Chalmerson in that second pair, which in my opinion, when it was at its peak, was probably one of the best shutdown pairs in the National Hockey League, gives you Keith and Seabrook on the first pairing again, and still gives you Brian Campbell as your fifth man, and Van Riemsdyk as your sixth man. Pretty solid defensive pair. Your top five is probably as good as any team in the league right now.
And you've got, of course, Calgary, Anaheim, Nashville, the Edmonton Oilers, and the Blues are all kind of rounding up the first eight. And then there's a little bit of a drop-off. So I don't even see where, if you think the Kings or the Jets or the Canucks have a chance to get into the wild card spot, or are they toast at this point of the season?
Well, I wouldn't say they're toast mathematically, simply because of the fact that there's the opportunity for these three-point games where you can get 1 point for losing a game in overtime or in a shootout, whereas you get zero for losing in regulation. And while that can help you, it can also hurt you because the teams that you're fighting with also have that opportunity to pick up an extra point for losing. I think right now the hottest team is the Calgary Flames. They've just won 10 in a row. And that when you sit back and think about it, that was a team that at the start of the season, if somebody had said, do you think the Calgary Flames will make the playoffs, most of us probably would have said at the best they're on the bubble. And here they are, second in the Pacific Division. They're quite a ways behind San Jose. But at the end of the day, they're still 9 points back. But at the end of the day, they're pretty solidly in second. And they're playing better than Anaheim. They're playing better than Los Angeles, which are established teams. And they're playing better than Edmonton. And Edmonton came out of the gate very quickly and looked like they were going to do some damage this year. But they're kind of slowly falling. So I think Calgary's in a great spot. And boy, if we could see a Calgary-Edmonton showdown in the first round, the renewed Battle of Alberta, that's kind of like Bears and Packers for the NFL comparison. That'd be a great series to see those two teams going at it for seven games.
Yeah, I don't know if you get that up where you are, but down in the States, the NBC Sports Network hypes what they call the rivalry Wednesdays. So they're always doing Philly, Pittsburgh, Chicago, St. Louis, and New York, the New York teams against each other, trying to really, even the New York against Philadelphia, to hype this whole notion of hockey rivalries. But it's clever marketing. You got to give them that.
Yeah, it is, and we do get that series. It's on Wednesday night with Doc Emmerich and Eddie Olczyk and Pierre McGuire, three great sportscasters. We saw the Pittsburgh-Chicago game a couple of weeks ago that was played at the United Center, and that might be one of the best hockey games I've seen in a long, long time. That was a game that had pretty much everything, and I was tight right to the end.
All right, John and Steve, now let's move on to soccer, as we promised.
So, John, I sent him the tape of the big game between Chelsea and Manchester United, and also want John to explain for our listeners, if you're not the soccer geeks that we are, what exactly is the FA Cup tournament?
Well, the FA Cup tournament is a very old and distinguished trophy. It's probably one of the longer standing competitions in European sport, and perhaps the best parallel is the NCAA basketball tournament. The FA Cup is open to any team in the country. You pay an entry fee and you get in. So that can be your top teams like Chelsea, Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, and so on and so forth. Or it could be the local works team. We had a situation this year where a non-league team, in other words, not one of the 92 professional teams, a team called Lincoln City, which plays in the city of Lincoln, which is in the south of England. They are semi-pros. Most of those guys work during the week. They're plumbers, tailors, doctors, bakers, and so on and so forth. And they knocked off a whole bunch of good teams. It's one and you're out, so it's much like the NCAA tournament. Lincoln City got to the last eight, and it's the first time in probably 50 or more years that a team from outside the Football League or the Premiership has gotten that far. And they had beaten some very good teams to get there. They kind of met their match last week with Arsenal. This weekend, Arsenal beat them 5-0. And there was four games this weekend, which were the quarterfinals in the FA Cup. And three of the games were very one-sided. Tottenham beat Millwall 6-0. Arsenal beat Lincoln City 5-0. And Manchester City beat Middlesbrough 2-0. And while the 2-0 score doesn't sound that dominating, if you actually looked at the statistics, you would see that for the most part, Middlesbrough were in the bottom 20% for all items. And perhaps the most exciting game for a lot of reasons was the Manchester United-Chelsea game. It was two top division teams playing, two teams that don't like each other. Very poor refereeing, and probably easy for me to say because I'm a Manchester United fan, born and raised, and I'm still a shareholder.
Yeah, and that's too bad when, you know, the officiating has an outcome and affects the game. Because nobody's happy. The fans aren't happy. The press isn't happy. And some team may feel like, well, did we win the game or did we not deserve to win the game? But, you know, in the end, and I guess with that Lincoln City example, the best thing, wouldn't that be almost like, John, if a, you know, an industrial league team went into the NCAA tournament and upset a couple of mid-majors?
It's drama. There's no other way to describe it. It's great, great sports, and everybody loves the underdog unless you happen to be a supporter of the big team. So I would say everybody that was looking at these games with Lincoln City, everybody other than the team that the fans of the team that they were playing were probably pulling for Lincoln City. And it's just great marketing. It really is.
Yeah, it's like one of those teams like Texas Corpus Christi or Mount St. Mary's, one of the little schools just going on a run, which has happened in the NCAA tournament, but not to the extent of that. And that's what makes that tournament fun. And imagine if that, Dave, if the NCAA tournament were going on concurrently with the regular season, which is essentially what this is, because there's no playoff in English soccer.
All right. Well, John, thank you very much for coming on the program. We do appreciate it, and we will do it again next week, my friend.
Yeah, my pleasure as always, guys. I look forward to chatting next week.
All right, will do. John Poulter from Toronto. And we want to thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Sports Report. Remember, you can catch us on demand at internetfm.com and kwwradio.com. Those podcasts are usually posted by 3 p.m. Central Time on Fridays. And you can hear us at 2 p.m. Central Time on Fridays at milehighradio.com. So for John Poulter, for Steve Leventhal, and for all our guests here on the program today, I want to say thank you for listening to the Sports Report. Have a great week. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Now it's over.
Ah!
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.